into a crime or not caught.
One of the Yakovs thought.
But maybe the union would have been marking the meeting. See? Maybe it would have been marking the meeting. But the Pasuk doesn't say that. The Pasuk says, all Yaakov said to them was one thing. Any Yaakov was still away, they're hot, and they're about to change the Yeshua or it. The Bakan of the Peace, the Nina saying, they're spot and they're so lively to leave in the smart can of innovation. Right? So, yeah, politically dead news. But really, the Yisraelim stock is a higher leader. Because the Bnei Nerech were Mizraim al Arayis. Right? Even though this wasn't Arayis, actually. What was this in the violators? What did you see violators? Seeing the parts of his ghetto, I think it was. Let me say some words, I don't know if it was ghetto. But they stole... Anyway. It was more than that. I'm about to say this. He says, the Yaakov Amal and the Kankir, the Yud, the Sakona, Shinema, Achat, Meshlavi, Shani, the Shom, Ir, Afam, the Yaakov, Chom, Wasma, Anche, Yair, Shom, Ulan, the Mamar, Yishavna, Yishem, Vayim, Ulan, Mechad, Vayim, Ubachim, Mechad, Ubachim, Ubachim, Vayim, Yashuv, Al, Hashem, Vayim, 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 Because Yaakov wouldn't allow the, Yaakov wouldn't allow them to kill up the city. They didn't know that. Right? So really, there's things like this. That's why the Ramban said. The question is, how does the Ramban know that Yaakov objected not just about something, but that he objected also because he held that really up to didn't, and maybe do the Mahdi Mutter. Right? All he said was Sakana, right?
Oh.
You have to say that. From the Sukra Maisa, you have to say that. Why? Because what was the plan? They wanted to kill out the city, right? Now Yaakov definitely wouldn't have allowed it. You see, right? So all along, they had a constructive plan which Yaakov would go along with. You see? Which Yaakov would go along with. Not for the reason of destroying the city. And then it would be a surprise. That would be something that would be a surprise to Yaakov. This is not to be a surprise to Shem.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, that would suck them out of life.
Right.
So the plan was, that we'll have you be Megaya. And then we'll really work together. Now Yaakov definitely went along and agreed with that. The family was thought, and he mocked with Chuba. You see? Therefore, you see clearly that he held off in a bigger mocked with Chuba, Yaakov. That's why the plan was on both, really. But the only thing is that the only thing he expressed to them was, he said like this, okay, the reason why he only mentioned Sarkana was for one reason. I said, all right, so this, you argue with me, I understand.
Yeah,
I can understand it. You hold their phonies, and I hold it their machu mutter. Maybe I'm wrong. But you have to agree with this kind of sakana. Sakana can't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's a little sakana. Raise your hand. I mean, even if they're wrong, you can't destroy them for the institute, right?
Oh.
That's, so what's the answer? What's the answer? They gave a very short answer. Vayemru. Hachazayna yaseth hachazayna? What kind of answer is that?
Oh, lovely.
The Shom Orar Apom. The Osu Chomas La'ayu Seher'ir. She'amru Lamba Mamadu Yishabi Tanhiru Amecha. Ve'ema Yibokhrim Ba'em Ubatku B'digum Ve'olo Yishuv Al-Hashem. What do you think? In the Orar Apom, Ramban said it wasn't Orar Apom because of the Sahara. But they are often because of the fact that they, when Yaakov later said, "All upon the earth," and King of the Lazy, you see? So, it's interesting. You kind of have a problem with it.
Because when
he said the anger is cursed because they killed out the whole city.
Keep
upon Hargu Ish. The turn of it is sure. So they destroyed the whole city, because of their anger. So it's a funny thing. When it came to the China over here that they that Yaakov used against them, he didn't sign it to them. It was an injustice.
These people are really good.
See? He signed it to them, you're crazy because Sakhar. Right? And when it comes to our Afam, the Ramban learns it was our Afam because they weren't, they didn't consider the Rimah Ramuta. What's your time for them? If your time is that the worst thing they did was because they put themselves in Makam Sakana, so you should say the Ara Apam should also be because of Makam Sakana. You know what I mean? That's the time. Right? But no, the time they used them, the time was really because of Sakana, right? But the Ara Apam was because of the Marshak, which is your prime time. Right? What's the answer?
How
often really has to be for the worst of the worst people? That's what the Arapam has to do. And Yaakov didn't change his mind. So therefore the worst evil was that they failed to see a chance over here to gain more people that had the true ideas. That was the real time against them. The only reason why he timed to them, he timed was Sakana, because that was the only time they would accept. There's two types of arguments. The dialectical argument, and then there's the real argument. The dialectical argument, you use the sign of Sakana. What do you do with that? See? But the real, apparently he held that the real evil was that they really weren't master of the town and looked at them. And he held they could have. But because of their anger prevented them from looking at the situation fairly, and their emotion came into the picture. And they did a grave injustice. The grave injustice was that they could have had people that they could have changed, and they didn't change them. That's the real injustice. What? If you suffer injustice, so then you show weakness. Right? Now, if people hate you anyway from one of the destroyer, so the moment you show weakness, then destiny will come down on you. Right? Now, there's always a danger in strength. The danger in strength is like, there's always a danger in strength. What is the danger? Over-retaliation. Why is over-retaliation a danger? Why is over-retaliation a danger? The hatred for persons.
No.
That gloats with his ego. A person like that goes to meditation for. If a person is egoistic, then there's a desire to destroy it. He does have desire to destroy it.
important.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, why is that? Why is that so early? Why not so?
Oh, there's always a hatred towards a person who maintains a superiority over you. That's where there's a certain hatred.
It's a kind of psychological problem. There's one out of the whatever. That's psychological root. But the reason is because the hatred is towards one who maintains that he is superior to you. He maintains he has a higher position than you. Now, over retaliation carries with it the characteristic of superiority, because it's aggression unjustified, right?
Yeah.
Ah. So there, you have to, whenever you have that, then you have a danger of, or on the contrary, then you have a danger of generating hatred. Okay? And you have a danger of generating hatred. That's why he said, I'll tell you, I have to say it like this. He says, Achata maisi, lahavi sheni b'yeshihar. Lahavi sheni means to produce hatred. Okay? Make me despicable. Hate it. Why hate it? Because since the over-aggression comes with superiority, and superiority causes hatred. That's what hatred is, just to generate hatred, superiority.
Not the fact that you retaliated yourself.
Yeah, that's right. That's the thing. In all the politics
in the European countries, since with Israel, with Egypt, all these things, all the same thing. Question is, the world will always accept an underdog retaliating to a certain degree that will even help them along, you see? But once it becomes more, then, there's a threat that these people can disappear. Superiority? Destroy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That's where it works. That's the fact that it always works. That's why over-retaliation is always that's why with Israel it can never be fear. Because Israel is always assumed as feeling superior. So therefore, even an equal exchange will not be good. Because the danger of superiority is always at the threshold of emergence. You know what I mean? So therefore, that's the key. Now, we want it in the land in battle, that doesn't matter. Give it back. You have to give it back now. You see? The arguments of, what's his name? Dave told me that they had in Brooklyn College, so Tahana was down there. So they had an article in one of the papers there. Have you heard about that? Yeah. An article in one of the papers.
The Jews wrote the article.
The article maintained that the Jews, they run the school, and this is always a danger, running. They think that they do everything. Control! Superiority! That's a danger. That's a threat. It's a threat of the Jews. Okay. Now, the thing is like this. So Tahana says that these guys say they don't have Jews, they only have Zionists. Right? He says, go over to the guy and punch him in the face and say that you don't hate him. You don't hate the guy. So you just want to punch him. Of course, that kind of stupid tyrant. The question is really, you have to deal with the tyrant realistically. You know what I mean? The tyrant seems to be a good one. Right? The tyrant seems to be good. Now, good tyrant is like this. They say, look, we like the Jews. The only thing is that we're against Zionism. Why are we against Zionism? Because Zionism, they say, they said these people were in these lands for thousands of years and really it belonged to them. And now the Jews come, the Jews have no right to the land. What did they say? They said, the Jews, this is what they said in the text, the Jews uprooted other people who lived there, they're doing the same thing that was done to them. They uprooted other people living in the takeoff and they really pushed these people out. Why would they have to push these people out? That's the time. You see? It's the time. I mean, it's a hard time to get out of. Tahana's answer is an aggressive answer, but it's not really answering the problem. Let's see, answer the problem logically. You know what I mean? Logically, they say, of course, both things you say it's not true. They really hate Jews. Okay, but then it's an argument. You say they hate Jews, and we say, they say they don't hate Jews. Huh? So you say, how do you get out of it?
You know what I mean? It's a hard trainer, really true. But the guy is hiding behind another trainer which works just as well as the original one. Let's say the original one is a hatred towards the Jews, right?
Yeah.
But now he has a staff, he has an auxiliary trainer, which also has the same result.
Onto the silver. I would take a good point. If you're going to maintain that, what is the premise that the Jews displaced other people, and therefore the land isn't born to them, has no rights there, right?
And then they have to maintain that any time, any land which was taken by people has to be given back to the original owners. If that's the case, then now it isn't. So then you are definitely against any evil, right? Not just against evil. Since you say you don't care about Jews, you're Zionism, you must be against the evil per se of Zionism. Evil per se of Zionism is taking lands which don't belong to them. It should be returned to the original owners, right? And certainly you would not partake of the evil itself. I mean, not only would you be against evil, you wouldn't partake of the evil itself, right? Then the question is, my good friends, is this country at one time belonged to other nations? As a matter of fact, they're still here today, and they're still making claims, the Indians. Then certainly we should give it back to the United States, the Indians, right? But you, my friend, are living in this country, and you are partaking of the evil by enjoying this very land over here. You have no right to do that. You shouldn't walk into your father's house. Especially the young youngsters always have one thing to buy. I'm not doing anything, guy. I'm not going to hear that. My parents, right? Oh, but you're living on the land. You want to walk into property? You should get off. You should move to another country that originally belonged to these, or at least there's no people around to claim the country claim the area.
We're going back to
that. Now, right. Now, isn't it odd, my friends, that you are against that, which, here you have a greater evil, but this is going to be a greater proportion, right, than Israel. Well, certainly you should be against the greater evil. How come you're not really objecting to the greater evil? Obviously, we must conclude that that's not the reason that really is disturbing you, but must be something specific to Israel. That's where you get rid of your auxiliary China. But you have to argue in terms of the the question is, if you say over retaliation, you're not going to say no retaliation. This is just a hatred. But according to them, on the
contrary,
Akhazara meant, on the contrary, that since he was the chief of the play, if we don't retaliate, it shows weakness. There's always hatred. Once there's weakness there, there's always hatred. And there's always hatred. We're going to also mention over there, why is it, you see, the thing about this, that they, like a lot of people, in regards to Kahana, one thing is right, that he says that the people, that the people be nice and die, and he says, don't be, and he says, you have to answer back. Being nice doesn't work. That definitely is true.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't answer. Why doesn't it work if you don't answer? Simple reason. Because when you don't answer, you yourself, see, the reason why a person is answer for one of two reasons. Either because he's a nice guy, doesn't want to bomb himself, or because he really has nothing to say. See? He really isn't it. Not answering is an admission of guilt. Once that admission of guilt, you justify their aggression.
Well, a lot of people claim that out there, they don't
mean
what? A lot of
people claim that out there. It doesn't work. That's wrong. Because the fear should be rational. In other words, if you're not answering out of fear, then you're not answering because you're afraid of the result, right? But the moment you don't answer, you're already admission of guilt, and on the contrary, that relieves the person's guilt for his aggression. You know, once you answer, then you put him in the aggressive. They're all done. The thing is, if people mistreat you and you don't retaliate, it's not just the fact that now you're weakened, they're going to come, and now you're at base, just because they want to destroy anybody. It's just a rampant aggression. The moment you don't retaliate, you show yourself, it's an admission of the fact that you deserve whatever was done to you.
It's an admission of guilt.
That's the mafia. The admission of guilt is the mafia for them to come in and destroy it. That justifies their action. You know what I mean?
You know what I mean? It's not just the fact that people are aggressive, and therefore they see that as something they retaliate to, they're going to kill
them. They don't just look around for aggression. Everything works in terms of psychology.
The psychology is that a person doesn't just go and destroy somebody else, because there's an element of guilt which prevents them. You see? But the moment you do not answer something which was an injustice which was done to you, it itself is an admission of guilt. One thing is an admission of guilt, then it's a mockery on the other guy's aggression. More than just the fact that he's looking for aggression. He says, oh, the hell, get away with it. You know, you are the one that starts the aggression. You're the start of the aggression by admitting the guilt that you deserve to have aggression done against you. That justifies the aggression. Because without the justification, aggression can't begin. See? That's the thing. That was their shot. That was their answer.
The Holocaust is an example of that.
What happened here? The Terrafox is who is right.
Yeah.
Like
the
Zeno.
Or
Rapham Kiyos. That's why Yaakov really didn't argue against the Or Rapham. He wasn't the Rambas. It wasn't because of the, because of the time of Satan. If that was, it could be it was a very dangerous say that Yaakov was right over there too. Because he didn't have any emotion. He was able to think of it clearly.
No way.
I in Holland, the Chazal said a person shouldn't, make himself big. But the moment you do that, there's always, everybody looks at the other guy, the danger of that this guy is feeling superior all of a sudden. Mm. You see? Truth of the matter is, it's a part of his own depression.
You're in a state of mind which is emotionally weak, so therefore you're especially at the moment. But anyway, okay, but that's not the point I'm interested in right now. The point is, That the point that Rashi says is that this klala means more than just that you'll die and your wife will be an amana and your child will be a but it means that they won't find your body and therefore your wife will be an amana, amana's chaya. She'll constantly be in a state of even. She can never remove herself from the state of amana because she can't marry somebody else. And the children will be in a state of being a yasam where they can't get on their own feet. Because they can't get the money, they will not be able to get the money from the fathers. Why? Because that's more allowed them, because maybe the father's alive. The person has no right to allow the child to go and claim the money. So that means, what does it mean? Rashi needs to say is that there'll constantly be a yasam. See, a yasam is one thing, but a person grows out of being a yasam. Because when he's in his talk, he's not a yasam anymore. He's not a yasam all his life. So what really makes a person, what gives a person independence? So Rashi says somewhere else, it says, that's called Yakum Asher Bradleyim, when they were destroyed, Korach, and all the Yakum Asher Bradleyim. So what does it mean Yakum, Rashi says? So Rashi says, Zem Amono Shalotim, Shem Amido Harago. It's referring to a person's money, because money makes him stand on his own two feet. He doesn't have money, he doesn't have independence. So over here, the yasam will always remain the yasam, but the kid will never be able to get the money. It's inherited. They can't stand on their feet. So it will be a protracted state of the yasamus and a protracted state of amun. That's what Rashi says. Okay, but from Rashi we see one thing. We see, according to Rashi, that the amun and the yasam will suffer in the end. So the question that the fellows asked is, what kind of justice is it? You're not allowed to. The Torah says that a person can't be punished because of somebody else's sin. So what kind of fairness is this? This man was Mitzvah Yasman Amana. So therefore, what's going to happen? So he's going to die. His wife will remain in Aguna. Who knows how long? And his son will remain in Yasman, not able to ever become independent. As the Rashi explains. Why should they suffer because of his faith?
Okay, that's the question.
So, I was thinking about the question, you know, we have a klal.
The klal is that Divrei Torah is Ashir Makom Echad Vanim Makom Echad. Divrei Torah sometimes in one place, the words are sparse, and in another place, the Torah stands. And if you understand the other place, you'll see you can apply it to this place. So I think that the answer to this question lies in understanding another area.
Okay.
Another area. The other area is another pasuk. The pasuk says in Yisra, the pasuk says like this, and he says the difference. Lo sishtach v'lehem v'lo sa'atein, you shouldn't worship other gods. Ki anokhi ha'ashim alakecha kel kana. Poked avon ovos albon. That I remember, I visit the sins of the father on the children. Al shilashim v'alibayim l'sanon. We had three or four generations. So it comes out that God punishes the children because of the parents. So of course, the question is not fair. So you all know the answer. The answer is it's only if the children follow in the ways of the parents. And where is it? The Gemara. It's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. There's an interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara's like this. It's on Dach Chof Zayin on the days. Gemara's like this. Menahan Emilia Tanarban. Where do we learn this?
What?
Lo yumsu avos abonim. No, the Torah abonim. Lo yumsu avos abonim, matam and loma. In the lamed, shall lo yumsu avos abonim. So the Gemara is trying to understand the Mishnah. I'm not interested in the Mishnah. You know what I mean? The Gemara wants to understand the Mishnah. But the Gemara says, Tanar abonim, price it like this. Lo yumsu avos abonim. Matam and loma. Why does that have to say, lo yumsu avos abonim? In the lamed, shall lo yumsu avos ba'avon bonim, ubonim ba'avon avos. In other words, it's speaking about onish menish amayim. So the pasuk says each man will only suffer death because of his own avir. Right? El lo yumsu avos abonim de'edis bonim. Ubonim lo yumsu avos de'edis avos. Okay, so that's what the Gemara says, that you learn out one person can't be magi. But there's really two systems of din that we have in the Torah. We have bezi shamata and bezi shamala. Right? So, that's the most question. Is the pasuk referring to Bezin Shel Mala? You don't have to, because it says Ishbechet and Yumasa. So therefore, the pasuk must be referring to Bezin Shel Mata. So what does it mean, Yisrael is Abanim? It must mean that the Ovos can't testify against the Abanim. Okay. That's the Gemara. So the Gemara says, now the Gemara says, I'm not interested in the area of Bezin, we're interested in the area of Din Mishamai. So the Gemara's like this. The Gemara says, "Ubonim lo yumsu, ubonim ba'avos lo." Are you telling me that in Bezin Shamala that the children can't suffer because of the sins of their fathers? The Gemara says, "Vaksiv." The pasuk says, "Poked avon avos ubonim." That God visits the sins of the parents on the children. So you see, he's poked avon avos. He takes the sins of the parents and he punishes the children. So how could you say that the children can't suffer because of the parents? That's too much conscience. The Gemara says, no problem. Hosam kishaoksin maisei alasayim b'yidayim. That's speaking where the children follow the ways of the sins of the father.
Okay.
Kedesanya, v'afafonos avosu mitim yimak. So it says in the Kolos that they will suffer. They will be destroyed because of the sins of the father. So the Gemara says, "Kishe oxen might say same be a damn," right? Then the Gemara goes on, "Ata alma kishe oxen." Does the pasuk mean that they follow the sins of the fathers? Away now, kishe eno. How do I know? Kishe alma ish pechete yumasu. Away kishe oxen might say same be a damn. You must say that because the pasuk says ish pechete yumasu. So therefore, you can't say that God's going to punish the children because of the... you have a contradiction. One person says God punishes the children because of the parents. The other person says, no, each person only suffers and doesn't show my love because of his own sins. So there's a contradiction. So you must say, speaking with the children follow and in the father's and the parents' footsteps. Okay? Fine. I have one question. The Gemara sounds very rational. But I have two questions on the Gemara. First question on the Gemara is like this. Why does the Gemara says maybe it's speaking where the children don't follow.
The father sins, right?
And what they can't be. Why? Because the pasuk says, Ishtachat
Yomot.
Right? I say, how could the Gemara have a Havmina? And the Gemara has a Havmina before also that way. But the Gemara asks the question. Ubonim b'avon avos lo, the children, are you telling me the children don't die because of the parents? But it says, poket avon avos ubonim,
right?
What kind of a question is this? The Gemara should simply say, this is impossible because we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just. Kelamuna vein avos, not even Yashu. Kol zroch of mishpat. All the ways of God are justice. What kind of justice is this? Doesn't make any sense. What do you have to have a prophet for? What's the Gemara asking a question? Are you telling me that the children aren't going to suffer? Can you tell me that the children aren't going to suffer because of the father? No, poke it up on others upon him. What do you mean, poke it up? It can't be. It's impossible. Why do you have to ask me a kasha from Yishtachetta Yumasa? Why does the Gemara just say it's impossible to entertain such an idea? You have to have a pasuk from Yishtachetta Yumasa. It just doesn't make any sense. Alright? That's one question. Now, so therefore, that's one question. Second question I have is like this. If now we say that it only works when the sons follow the father's averus, right? So I don't understand. What's the poket avon avos ubonim? If the son follows the father's averus, so then he deserves it himself, right? Elamai, you're going to tell me if he follows the father's avera, so then he's going to get punishment not just for him, but for the father. So again, you have the same problem, so it's not fair again. Not fair again. So what's the answer? No monitor. Right? That's the point. By the way, it's not just the one. Tegum Unkulus says, ultimately, right on the pot. Says the only time they get punished is if they follow the ways of the father. That means that that's the shot in the pot. Okay. The answer is based on a shiur I gave, I think it was last year, the year before this, in Hilchos Shiur. All right? Now, I'm not going to go through the shiur. I'm just going to give you the basic outcome, the premise, all right? There was a shiur in the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuvah that there's a whole cheshbon the Rambam has about how God counts up eretz and mitzvahs in a person. He has like this. He has, when they weigh the sins of a person, it's in Paragim Luch Chilavah Ha'ei. So, the only, they don't count the first of eretz, they don't count the second, Elam Shlishi Ve'elech. Count from the third of Iran. It's a whole system. And if you go through the Rambam, you see it's a whole system of how God has done the Rishayim and has done the whole world. The whole bit. So we have a lot of caution on the Rambam. What kind of a system is this? First one doesn't count the second one. What does it mean? So I'm not going to go through extensively with the problems of the Rambam and the solution. I'm just going to say the basic idea that we said was on that Rambam is that Rambam is discussing how God judges the world. Now, the way God judges the world is not the same as the way God judges each individual person. Ultimately. In other words, the ultimate din that a person receives is Olam Haba. That's where he gets exactly what he deserves. But the way God has done the world is a different system altogether. If God was done the world with Midas Hadin, which means according to the way every person deserves, there simply wouldn't be any existence in the world. So God's method of being down the world it follows different principles. It's principles which permit the world to exist, but yet only in a certain way. One principle we know is, we don't know too much about how God is down the world, but we know certain basic principles. One principle we know is that God will not permit the world to ever be in a state of total evil, which means that there are only evil people in the world. So therefore, God has to bring punishments to the world at certain times, in order that this should never occur, that such a thing should never occur. Now, God's system of being done the world is not the same as a system the way he's done a person ultimately, which means to say a person can do many avers in this world, he might not get any onus. Why not get any answer? It's a different system. Olam Haba is the only place where a person gets exactly what he deserves. But in Olam Hazeh, it's a different kind of a system. The world has to go on. If God's will, the world should exist. And the way he's done is based upon many different factors. It's a whole system that must continue to exist, and only God's knowledge knows the whole system and knows exactly how it should continue, so that basically we have a world in which it's possible to have perfection. Perfection is not rendered impossible, and yet there's a bechira, tremendous amount of bechira.
Okay.
Now, there's a principle that's in the Rambam and in the Ramban, and that's a principle with regard to God Hashgacha. And we say, we've mentioned it many times, and in the yeshiva we take the Rambam and the Ramban seriously. The Rambam and the Ramban both say that God's Hashgacha doesn't relate to every person in the same way. Insofar as a person is on a higher level, he has more Hashgacha. Insofar as he's on a lower level, he has less Hashgacha.
Okay?
So everything that comes, that happens to a person is not necessarily God's particular will, you see, bashet like that. And it doesn't mean it's not Bashar either, but it depends what you mean by Bashar. If you mean God's specific will, that only, Eini Hashem al Yireach, the Ramban says, means only great people, everything that they do is under the direct Hashgacha Hashem. But people who aren't on that level are under a general Hashgacha. Chance, you see. God knows that they are under this chance. But that's part of the onus, basically, of being removed from God. That he's in a world of chance. Okay? Now, insofar as a person is in a world of chance, certain things can happen to him. A person's walking under a bridge, and the bridge is about to collapse. It can kill him. He's not under his death. He can die. Because God is not going to change the law of the universe in order to save this person, unless this person is under a special azah. A great novi, a great tzaddik. A person who's a tzaddik can be saved, or even another individual can be saved if it's God's will for that particular individual at that particular time they should be saved. You see? But it's not necessarily so. We don't know exactly when and how it works. We know that there is Hashgacha, but we don't know the details of how God works in Hashgacha. But it's possible that a person will die. And that is Gemara Shabbat that says that Rav never went on a ship with a Russian and then jacked him up. A lot of us is afraid that he would go downhill. They see that even an Amora had to be concerned in certain situations to avoid certain situations of danger. Alright? Because he's not under his guard. He could die before his time. So, therefore, it's like this. See, when God gives an onesh, there are certain rules that he's giving an onesh that has to work out in reality. Now, there are certain laws that God uses in giving out an onesh.
Okay.
Now, it could be the necessary sometimes that a specific person should get an onesh in order to keep the world in line. Now, it's even possible that his children will, let's say for instance, his children should die. That should be the onesh. We don't know what an onesh is. God knows exactly what the proper onesh is. We can't get involved in that. But we know that there are certain onshim that God deems are proper and appropriate at a certain time. Now let's say, for instance, the onshim should be that a person's child should die.
Okay?
Now, that onshim is no different than like a bridge collapses. If that child is a tzaddik gamor, then of course it won't occur to him. The tzaddik gamor is under the direct hashgacha. But if he's not a tzaddik gamor, okay? So then it's possible, then the onshim, which is supposed to befall this rasha, He could be an object of that onesh, just like he could be an object of a bridge collapsing. There's absolutely no difference. So therefore, it's possible for this person to succumb, to die, because he's an object of an onesh. You see? The Gemara says, do we say that God will not punish a child because of his parents? Right? What's the Gemara's Havminus? Gemara's Havminus is like this. That in the system of onshin, God has to work in this world with a certain system to keep the world going. Now, if it happens to be that the child is going to be in the way of a particular onish, who says that the onish is going to be removed because of that? He'll unfortunately succumb, because he's not a tzaddik gamor, so he's going to succumb. So the Gemara says, no, what is, Rotsiv, Ish Bechetto Yuma. No, but you see that God's way of giving out an onus isn't that way. That if the child doesn't deserve the onus, then God will not even cause the onus to come into existence, even though he's not a tzaddik gomer. In other words, it would be like God would save him from the bridge, so to speak. You understand what I mean? The Gemara needs a pasuk because it's possible theoretically not to be that way. But you see, the pasuk says that God doesn't work that way. So when does it work? So the Gemara says, "Poket avon avos avonim kishehochim b'maisei avosayim." What does that mean to say? It means like this: that if the child follows the ways of the father, so then he could be an object of onus for the father, and will receive a greater onus than if it was even for he himself. He's not going to prevent an onus from being chal if he follows the father. Kishehochim b'maisei avosayim. So that's the Gemara's answer. Gemara is like this. Gemara is a contradiction. Ish v'chata yumar, which means to say God will never create a punishment for a father if the child isn't deserving of it, even though the child's not a tzaddik gomer. But that's not the way God. That's not the way God administers justice in this world. He could have administered it that way, but you see the pasuk says he doesn't.
Right.
So we see that Chesed Hashem is such that He will not administer such an onus.
Okay.
But we see that poked avon avos avon.
Right.
So how is that possible? So the Gemara says, Kishahochim, my Selechayim, be a dam, where the child follows the ways of the father. So then, the onus that's supposed to come to the father as a rush at a specific time and place, he won't be protected from it. And he will suffer the onus. That's the rule of Poket Avon Avos Avon. So the Gemara says, that's the way that we see from these psukim how God administers justice. That's the Chiddush of Ritzel. Okay? So that's the guideline. That's the way it works. That's what it works. Moreover, now you'll understand by Avraham Avinu, and Avraham Avinu was the spoil to save Sodom and Amorah, the five cities, because of the tzaddikim that are found in the cities. Why did they ask us that? Why didn't Avraham Avinu just ask the question about just take the tzaddikim out? You see? Just take the tzaddikim out. The answer is, because Avraham Avinu was involved in the question of God's administering justice to the whole city. That's why he only has 50, only certain numbers. Rashi explains 50, then 45, then 40, then 30, then 20, then 10. So from 50, he wanted to save all five cities, 10 in each city. It was a question in terms of God's administering justice to the society. It wasn't a question of how could God destroy the Tzaddik and the Russia. How could God destroy the tzaddik? Because in the end, he didn't go below 10. He can't destroy a tzaddik, he can't destroy 10 tzaddik, he can't destroy one tzaddik. You see? But the answer is that once there is an onus to be given, unless a person is under a very special hashgacha, the onus is gonna hit him. The onus is gonna hit him. So Avraham Avinu was speaking in terms of the society, which is that if you have 10 people, a minion, that's why only if there's a minion. A minion means that there's a society that's operating according to justice. How do you destroy that society together with the other society? That was a problem in this case. But it was not a society. The yachad is a different problem. Avraham Avinu wasn't asking about the yachad. Yachad is a different role. Yachad is a different role.
Okay?
The only one you see that had the hashgacha to be saved was Lot. He was the only one. It was a special hashgacha. Lot was the only one as an individual. But Avraham Avinu's argument was on a societal level, because he was arguing with God in terms of God's system of administering justice on a societal level. It's a different kind of a system.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, let's get back to the case of the Alman and the Yassin. What I want to say is like this, that the case of the Alman and the Yassin is based on the same thing. See, the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says like this. The Gemara over there says, are you saying Avos Avonim? It says V'chashlu Ish Li'ochiv, and the Kabbalah says that a brother will be punished for another brother. The Gemara says Hasan Mishim V'lomich. Ayyadiyar Limchos V'lomich. The Gemara says that because they didn't object. But I want to tell you, Hochim Ochim Maisei Avoseim B'Yadayim doesn't necessarily mean, you see, that they do the exact same thing as the father. But again, if they did the exact same thing as the father, then there wouldn't be any. Yes, wouldn't they need for an Arshan? It means they follow the ways. They follow in their ways. They may not be as bad, but they follow in their ways. Now, the point I want to make is like this, that the same is true with regard to with regard to a family. In other words, if a person is sympathetic to the ways of his father and the ways of his father is vicious, so he also is involved. Even not objecting is considered an avera, in which case the person can be involved in onesh. So the case where the Gemara, where the prophet is speaking about, that the almona and the yosel suffer, it means varakti, varakti eschem b'chorev. You notice the pasuk in plural. Varakti eschem b'chorev, v'ayu nesheichem almonos of nesheichem yosel. It means on a societal level, where the society condones the actions of those individuals that torment the yosel and the almonos. So it means that everybody was involved. Some people more actively, but the wives and the children were sympathetic. They were sympathetic towards the sin of the husband. So therefore, they're subject to the onesh. Therefore, they won't be spared from the onesh. And even though they didn't do it the same way, but they remove what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin is one thing. At the moment the person is involved in the same faith, even though it's not to the same degree, but they're involved, they're sympathizers, then they won't be spared in terms of the onesh that the other person, either Russia, is supposed to receive. See, that's the way that Gaha was. In general, this principle was found is that there's a known chazal. That in general, the societal mishpat and the individual mishpat are two different things. That's why there's different frameworks. How they clash and how they work out, that's only God can understand. But we know they're two different frameworks. That's why saying Rosh Hashanah, God's down every yachid and down all the nations. Different thing. Another Gemara says that once kilin shenik yishkus lamashtas, ain't a mafsum may tell the Lord anymore. That once there's a scourge, once there's total desolation, even good people get there's different kinds of judgments that God makes. We don't know how these no human being can fathom is putting together the whole thing and so that the system should continue to work and we should continue to have the Torah and that we shouldn't live in a totally evil society. That's God's question. I want to mention one thing. Even though we always mention the Rambam and the Ramban, that only a tzaddik gomer is completely under hashgacha, doesn't mean that a person can say that he's not under hashgacha at different times. It means every person, goes according to the Torah. And secondly, you can't say, even though a person is not a tzaddik gomer, it doesn't mean he's not under hashgacha. It means he's not under hashgacha at all times. But his life could be saved because of hashgacha. That's why you have a birchas gomer, otherwise you wouldn't have a birchas gomer. Person shouldn't be such an honor to say, look, I'm never under that. That's the thing. A person doesn't know when he's under that. That's a person can't know such a thing. But to say that the person shouldn't feel he's never under that, that would be wrong.